Hello, and welcome to the Mayo Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. In this episode, we're going to be talking about the top trade sales for October 2019 as sold through Diamond to retailers predominantly in North America. We've got the top 500. We're going to, when we do month-to-month stuff, limit it to the top 300 because we've got that going back further. Joining me on these episodes, as always, is TJ. How are you doing today, TJ?
Doing well.
So, there was a couple of things in October that was a little bit different than what we've seen in some past months. We'll get to that when we hop to the top trades list. If we look at the breakdown of the top 300 trade sales, DC had the largest percentage with 30.18% of the units. Marvel had 23.16% of the units, so there's a little over a 17% gap between those two. And then Image coming in kind of that third place with 16.51% of the units. We do that now by dollars, and man, that gap between Marvel and DC closes. DC took 31.63% of the total retail dollars for the top 300 trades. Marvel not far behind with 29.25% of the top dollars. That's what a less than a 2.5% difference.
Mm-hmm.
So part of that is just a higher average price over at Marvel than at DC. That's really no big surprise. It's interesting, though, the min and max price for the two publishers was the same. $9.99 for the minimum price at Marvel and DC, $150 for the maximum price at Marvel and DC. But it's just kind of where things skew in terms of where they fell. And DC had 81 items on the list. 52 of them were reorders, 29 were new. Marvel had 58 items on the list, 9 of which were reorders, 49 of them were new. So different breakdown in terms of new and old material.
Gotcha.
Looking a little further down on the breakdown, we've got Dark Horse, Viz, Boom, IDW, Dynamite, and then really about, what, almost another 24 publishers. We see a lot more publishers on the trade list than the comic sales list, just because I think the price points, it winds up being a leveler playing field. I think people are a little less reluctant to pay, you know, the $19.99 or whatever for a trade from a smaller publisher than, you know, the equivalent price on the first issue or something like that on a comic series, wondering, is it ever going to finish?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that's an unfair thing for people to put on the publishers because a lot of them do finish their miniseries and stuff. Other times, I think it's a very fair concern because there are some publishers that don't have as good of a track record as they should in that area.
That's absolutely true.
It's unfortunate, and I get it, but and it's not as big of a problem as it used to be. There was a period in time where, you know, new publishers were coming out left, right, and center, lasting, you know, a few issues in and then just kind of vanishing.
Yep.
And that not only hurts their sales, but I think it hurts sales of other up-and-coming publishers because it really, I think, got a lot of us into the, well, I'll wait and see if they're still around in 6 months kind of mindset.
Mm-hmm.
If we look at the total units for Marvel and DC at the top 300, it's a little over 89,000 for DC and 68,000 for Marvel. But man, again, we flip that to dollars, and it's about $160,000 difference between the two publishers, with DC being over 2 million and Marvel being a little over 1.9 million.
Mm-hmm.
So, man, the price difference and stuff there really takes that difference in units and minimizes it in terms of the difference on the dollars.
But, and we're used to seeing that at Marvel. They just have a general average higher overall price, especially on the collected editions. So.
Absolutely. And I get it. I mean, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter how many units you sell. You stay in business by making more money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but in terms of are you really winning over the readers and stuff, I think there's a lot to be said for looking at it on a unit basis because it's so easy to game the system with the pricing.
Yeah, that is true.
And ideally, you sell more units at a lower cost, whether that's at a higher cover price or not is, I don't want to say irrelevant, but, you know, if you're selling a you know, 80,000 units or whatever, and you're doing it with one title versus, you know, 80,000 titles, there's a huge difference in effort you had to expend to get those sales.
Mm-hmm.
That's, of course, really extreme, but you get the idea. Shall we head over to the top trades list?
Absolutely.
Top item on the list, honestly, is a little surprising to me. It is Doomsday Clock Part 1 hardcover, 61,031 units. This is covering the first 6 issues of the series, and it surprises me because, one, they didn't get it out earlier than this, because the 11th part is already out of the comic side, out of 12, and two, I would have expected people to, at this point, to just wait for a full trade.
Yeah, that was actually, since I have not read the series in individual issues, that was something I wanted to ask you. A couple questions. Were the first 6 issues, did it feel like a natural stopping point, like for a collection at 6 issues? And then the other is, yeah, why would the retailers go in on this unless it was a super discount, which I don't think it was, knowing that the other versions, and you know with this material, there's going to be oversized hardcover, absolute, yada, yada. Why would they, unless they had real orders for this, I don't know why they'd order this.
I didn't feel at this point, and it's been a while since I've read those issues, that there was a natural stopping point at issue 6.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been feeling each installment moved the story so slowly that it was hard for it to build up any momentum to have a natural pausing point.
Mm-hmm.
As for why retailers would get behind this, I think a lot of them were not happy about it, but I think there's also potentially, and I'll try to remember to check with Eric on this when I do the next set of comic numbers with him and Sam. I think there was an issue, and I want to say it was issue 3, that's no longer in print.
Ah.
And that's kind of forcing some people to go to a collected edition to get the part they missed.
Yeah.
And if that's true, and I think it is, but I don't know for certain, that's a bad way to do business.
Yeah, that's frustrating for sure.
And for it to have taken, you know, this long to get the first 6 issues out, if they'd gone 6 issues, we're waiting for the 7th or the 8th, and boom, this came out, okay, I get it. But this came out right around the time, give or take a month, that issue 11 came out.
Mm-hmm.
And that just seems so far behind the curve that this doesn't really catch people up. They still have another 5 issues they're behind. So I'm not sure what the mindset was on that. $25 for the 6 issues, not bad. Matter of fact, I think that works out much better than the price point per issue, which I'm pretty sure was $3.99, but again, that thing is coming out so slowly that
I thought that they were prestige size and were $4.99.
I think you may be right, actually. I was going to say, it's coming out so slowly and stuff, it's hard for me to remember what price point it is at.
See, John, yet another reason why you should join me on the collected edition side. You don't even remember what you read, but I'll read the hardcover and it'll be great.
There is that. yeah, I think the point we're at now is not that I'm going to join you on the trade side. When I'm stopping reading some of the books, I'm stopping reading some of the books.
Yeah. No, I agree. Only read what you want to read. But it's just sometimes it's funny because you guys will do the weekly comic spotlight, and then every once, you know, every 4 months, one of those issues will be published, and you'll be like, well, I tried to remember what the last 3 issues were about to remember to catch up on this. And it's just like, oh, man.
For me, that's a commentary on story momentum.
Yeah.
I think it is possible to do a quarterly book and be able to get back into the story no problem. And I don't say that hypothetically. That's how I read Loving Capes when Tom Zoller was originally releasing it quarterly.
Mm-hmm.
But he was such a good storyteller. It was so accessible. He reminded me the character names, the status quo, had enough story beats per issue that it's like, okay, stuff's happening in here. Whereas with Doomsday Clock, it's kind of that slow roll going for the style, I don't say over the substance, because it's got some story there, but it had led me to believe that it was going to be, you know, the Watchmen versus the DC characters, you know, and it was going to be a really big, you know, free-for-all kind of fight or whatever, and maybe we'll get that in the final issue.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the stuff that they did in the first issue, I don't know if some of those characters really played that big into the story later, but again, every other month, every third month, it's hard for me to get back into the story enough to really feel like it's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And this was something that was billed as being a, you know, at the end of this, the entire DC universe was going to change. And I think at the end of this, the entire DC universe will change, but not because of this. You know, we've got those rumors of the 5G reboot and stuff like that. And I think the prolonged timeline on Doomsday Clock is just, it's been a mistake on multiple levels.
Well, yeah, I mean, there were obviously, at the beginning, there were plans to have it be kind of tied into the ideas that were going on in the regular main DCU and everything. And it just got so far behind, I think all of that had to be abandoned.
Things that were being built up in Doomsday Clock, where they were teasing the Legion of Superheroes and the Justice Society, we've gotten both of those, but through no fault of Doomsday Clock.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it took some of the plot lines from there and really wound up just cutting them off at the knees. And this is something where if you're going to do something that's effectively an event series, although I think it could be argued either way on that, you need to plan a little further ahead. You need to have more stuff ready to go before you get that first issue out there. And they didn't have their ducks in a row, and it was unfortunate. But it still, you know, this collection topped the list this month. Now, granted, 6,131 units would have gotten blown away in many months by a Walking Dead, by a Saga, by, you know, something of that caliber. So it did top the list, but it's not like it just lit the sales on fire.
Yeah, the overall nothing being over 10,000 units this month, it kind of feels to me like a little bit of a quieter month for sure.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. If you look at the next item, Wicked and Divine Volume 9 trade paperback, 5,158 units, that's the only other thing above 5,000 units.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, technically above 4,600 units. So lackluster sales, I think, is a fair term to use this month. Again, you figure there's 2,000-3,000 stores. There's only, you know, I don't know, a dozen or two items that, statistically speaking, probably got into every store. And that's fine. I don't expect everything to make it to every store.
Mm-hmm.
But I expect a lot more things to be doing it than seem to be. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked the last couple months about, you know, seeing this kind of general trend line, and maybe we'll see things pick up next month, considering that it's the holiday, you know, the month before the holidays, and all the publishers want to kind of make sure all their big stuff is in the stores available. But I'm just wondering if more of the sales are going to direct market in terms of the collected editions. You know, the convenience of Amazon, the bookstore market, you know, a lot of that demand is shifting away. Now, I know some stores are increasing their what they offer in terms of like kids and young reader books, because that's an area of growth. But just what we see at the top of the trades, you know, at least in the direct market, I just don't see the 15,000 to 20,000 units that move as often as we used to.
I don't know that was ever incredibly commonplace once you got out of, say, Saga, Walking Dead, and a few things like that. But I don't think there's any reason it shouldn't be commonplace to have a few items doing, you know, above 10,000 units every time they come out.
Yeah, that's a similar thing. I mean, on the single issue side, now a lot of that is gimmicky with number ones and 14 different covers. You know, we routinely will see something over 100,000 units, or the top 10 usually has 5 to 7 items that are over 200,000 or 100, you know, depending on the time of year with events or whatnot. But, you know, in the top 10 of the trades, you should be able to have some decent sales. But, you know,
you certainly should have, I would say, half a dozen to a dozen items doing over 5,000 units.
Mm-hmm.
That, to me, shouldn't be that high of a bar, because every month you either ought to have another Batman trade, Avengers trade, or a Saga, Walking Dead. Granted, Walking Dead is ended, Saga's on hiatus, but you get the idea. You should have enough properties that are strong enough that at least a couple of them are coming out in a collected edition.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the reality we're living in, unfortunately. And I think trades have an inherent sales advantage over single issues in terms of a bigger story installment, an equivalent or better price point per story page, and again, the fact that you get that full story. It's not, geez, I'm going to get left on a cliffhanger or something. And you get some of that too in some trades and whatnot, but not as bad as you get in the regular, you know, monthly issue or something. So I think there's some stuff they need to do on their storytelling, obviously starting on the monthly side to where it gets collected into the trade side, and it's got those natural pausing points, that bang for the buck, and that, wow, I really do need to catch up on this title aspect that they just don't have. So we'll see how this does, because Wicked and Divine, that Volume 9, is the final story arc.
I was just going to say, I believe that series is wrapping up, and that is the last one then.
And if we go down to the next item, Spider-Man Life Story, that was a mini-series. You know, it did 4,562 units. Not bad, certainly, but not something it's going to repeat because it's over. Then we've got Inthanos Infinity Ending, which is an original graphic novel, 4,347 units. It was an original graphic novel, ergo, again, not like there's going to be, you know, another volume, another volume, another volume kind of a deal. So, I mean, we quickly start running out of things that are, is this going to have, you know, an impact on this list again in 6 months or whenever the next volume might come out?
Mm-hmm.
And granted, there have been multiple Thanos Infinity books, so it has been on the list a few times under the different titles and stuff, but this is, of course, named The Infinity Ending.
Yeah, very original there.
Well, I mean, maybe we'll get Thanos Infinity Epilogue.
Oh, man.
But I doubt it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, comics never fails to find a way to repackage things, so I'm sure that they'll, you know, repackage them in six different ways, all the different versions.
I would expect those Thanos Infinity books to get into an omnibus of some sort, probably.
Absolutely.
And I think that makes sense. But, you know, then the next item is Ascender Volume 1 trade paperback, 4,233 units. There's going to be a Volume 2 of Ascender, which is good. So that's, like, the one thing over 4,000 units that is likely to have, you know, an impact on this list sometime in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
At the top of the list, I should say. Obviously, we'll see some reorders and some of this other stuff down at the bottom throughout, but it just seems like they're not building up a base that they can keep coming back to, getting more sales on, and stuff like that. But so much of the trades list has gotten to be singular installments with continuing volume this over that kind of a deal being more the exception than the rule.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is a decision the publishers made many, many years ago that I don't think was to their benefit. You know, every time you come out with a new volume one of Batman or Superman or, you know, whatever, when there's really, you know, 30 volumes before it that you might be able to hook people on if you hadn't kept cutting off the continuity and restarting. You know, it's, I think there's a balance to be had on numbering the volumes but focusing on the subtitle versus the volume number.
Mm-hmm.
It's like how the old pocketbook Star Trek series used to be, where they would number each one of them so you know the sequence they came out in, but you didn't have to read the first 50 to read that 51st volume. It was complete in one. Maybe you get some benefit from having read the others, maybe you don't or whatever, but if you like that, you know there's 50 others to go get.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas here, if you come off of one of these thinking, wow, I thought it was great, more often than not, it's either not going to have a volume number, that volume number is going to be one, and say, well, maybe they'll come out with another one, but I guess I'm done. It just seems like a bad way to build sales.
Yeah. It's one of those things where I think they just box themselves in and they're moving along the road that they created for themselves.
They are, but I think there are ways to get out of it.
And I agree with you. Like, for instance, right after Ascender, the DC Superhero Girls at Metropolis High. So that's like an example of DC trying something different or targeting a different audience. Now, again, it's kind of like almost a standalone graphic novel, right? But the price point's right. You know, it's a different audience than the Weekly Wednesday Warrior. And so I kind of am encouraged to see that. And obviously, I'm sure that there are sales outside the direct market for that as well. Now, 3,951 sales. You know, that's not great, but maybe that has legs, maybe it has reorder activity, maybe it's selling three times that much or four times that much in another venue.
This is one that I definitely think is going to be selling decently outside of the direct market. This is one where I think it's got a lot of potential in like the Scholastic and the library market and stuff, because I think the younger female audience it's trying to target is not as much in the comic stores.
Mm-hmm.
But this is also something where they've dropped the volume number.
Exactly. And then you would know more than me. I mean, I'm not great at reading these charts. is that like digest size? Is that why that price is lower? Is it only like 120 pages? You know, is it 6x9? I'm just wondering in terms of our, how are they targeting that market? Are they targeting kind of like almost the, I forget they had like a something ink a few years ago, another kind of like imprint that they did something similar with.
There's DC Zoom and their DC Ink. I think these predate both of those, but are in line with that kind of mindset.
Gotcha.
And they've had, I want to say, a dozen volumes of DC Superhero Girls.
Gotcha.
They used to number them, then they kind of stopped doing that.
You know, and now that I'm thinking about it, I think what happened is the success of the DC Superhero Girls, I think, is kind of was what caused them to really lean into those two new imprints, right? Is they were having quite a bit of success in that one or two of the cons that they have the executives speak at. They talked about how that was a growing market and they were going to lean into that. And then I think, you know, within the next 6 months, they announced those two imprints. So
I think so. And then a year and a half later, they said, well, we're going to kind of collapse those and just do a DC Kids sort of thing.
Well, and never forget that AT&T can screw almost anything up. So don't worry. There's more to come.
I don't blame AT&T on this.
No, I know, but I'm just saying, like, there's a lot of change, I think, at DC because there's been a lot of reorientation in terms of leadership. So,
yeah, and I think the DC Superhero Girls, I mean, I've talked about this before. I think it was a great move. It hit a different target audience. Well, I do think they've fractured their characters by having so many different competing incarnations of them. I can see how this particular one is getting them a foothold into an audience that is good now, but could pay dividends 5-10 years from now as those younger girls get older, get more into the geek culture and stuff like that, and become big fans of these characters later in life.
Mm-hmm.
More so than they might be already. And I think it's great for them to do that kind of outreach program. But if somebody sees this and says, oh, DC Superhero Girls at Metropolis High, boom, got it, loved it, I wonder if there's any more.
Mm-hmm.
You could search and find, you know, search for Atlantis, Out of the Bottle, Spaced Out, and, you know, again, probably a half a dozen or so more than that. But if it just said, hey, this is number whatever of, you know, then you at least know there's so many before it. I also don't know if they've got a transition plan to get people who are fans of this material eventually into the more mainstream DC books.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I remember when I was a kid getting the Super Friends comics, which is part of the DC TV line at the time, and they would reference the Justice League and stuff like that, and it was kind of, here's a very kid-friendly version of the Justice League. You could then migrate into the actual Justice League title when you decided to.
Yeah. I mean, that I think that's always been the tough part is you have, you know, kid stuff that's drawn and oriented to kids. And then as they get older, are they going to be able to transition to the storytelling for adults and the art that oftentimes is very different? And also, just like we always talk about, someone who sees a certain type of art style when they first encounter comics 20 years later, if you want them to keep reading, are they going to be still drawn to the same, to a different type of art style? Or are they going to be willing to try new stories? Because both these companies have such an extensive back catalog. So there's a lot of opportunity for people to be, you know, to be shepherded into that, you know, back catalog. But at the same time, if they're used to a certain type of story, a certain type of art, are they going to reject a lot of that back material?
Certainly, I think as somebody ages, their taste in art may shift, but they also may want the nostalgia thing. So I definitely think that plays in. But I think what's worse now than like when I was a kid reading the Super Friends, it was Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, etc.
Mm-hmm.
Not a teenage version of those characters or a version like of Spider-Man wearing a baseball jersey and outfit on top of his Spider-Man costume because, well, that's how Spider-Man played baseball as a kid or something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now we've got different versions of the characters. So even if the person can get past the art style difference, the storytelling style difference, now they've got a different character to deal with. And I think like the version of the Super Sons that DC was publishing in the comics a year ago, what they've got right now in the mainstream comics and what they've got in some of these, like the Super Sons DC Zoom title at rank 18, volume 2, the Foxglove Mission. Those are different versions of the characters. I mean, in the mainstream DC universe, they've just kind of aged one or of them up or whatever, but those versions of John and Damian are different than what they've got in the Super Sons trade. So if you like that, you're going to find it a little off-putting to go to the comics. Just like somehow if you like some of the TV shows or whatever, and then you go to the comics, it's like, this is a different status quo. It's a different take on the characters. It's hard to make that leap.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I remember when I was in college, one year for Christmas, I got a few of the Star Trek novels as a gift. And I enjoyed Star Trek the show, but if I had read those novels and it was like a different version of the characters, I probably never would have gotten into it. But as it was, it resonated with the version I knew of these characters from the show. I got into the books and read, at one point, most of the ones that had come out. But I think that kind of transition plan for Marvel and DC characters in particular is tough, because not only are the story elements different, or in some cases reversed, it seems like, the characters are so different.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you ask some people who the original X-Men are, and their answer is going to tell you, did they start by reading the comics, watching the Fox cartoon, X-Men Evolution, or the movies? You know, and I recently was in a conversation with somebody, and said, yeah, I'm a fan of comics and stuff, and they asked, you know, well, DC or Marvel, which is an obvious, fair question. But kind of sensing where the conversation was about to go, I asked, did they mean the comics or the movies? Because I think certainly the Marvel movies, brilliant and stuff, but on the comic side, I grew up on the DC side, so I've got an affinity there. But we're at a point where these characters exist in so many flavors of themselves, it is insane.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that makes it hard for people to get into the comic reading hobby and may consider themselves fans of comics because they watch the movies.
I think it also speaks to this, the fragmentation of entertainment in media, and the company saying, well, we don't have the marketing budget or maybe the ability, or haven't figured a way out how to, you know, funnel people to these, what we consider like these consistent representations of the character or the classic or whatever. So we're just going to, instead of going that direction, we're going to go the exact opposite. Everyone's going to have their own version of it. We're going to have 52 different versions, and whichever funnel you came in on is the one you can just keep writing, because we're going to keep making content in that.
If they keep making content in each of those, that's great, because then you've satisfied all the audience.
Yeah.
And I think the audience is sophisticated enough that the whole multiverse, hey, they all coexist on different worlds, you can do that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they did it well with Spider-Verse, Crisis on Infinite Earths, etc. But what usually happens is the version some people like, they just stop producing. That loses that audience. You know, there are some people who really prefer the Smallville take on the televised Superman to Lois and Clark versus, you know, the version they've got on the Supergirl show.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, they're not making all of those anymore. So I get that you can't have one version of Batman that will appeal to everybody. Got it. I'm okay with there being a slightly different version in a live-action show versus a cartoon versus a movie versus the comics. But when you start having 7 or 8 just in the comics, that's where I think you start to lose the audience. Certainly you fragmented the audience, and that's why I think the sales numbers tend to be what they are, is people can really pick and choose which stories they want versus having gotten potentially hooked on more of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a tricky problem, because I understand your concern, but I think a lot of times the executives, and they're operating from, what's going to get me through the next 6 months, you know what I mean?
Absolutely. But I think not only do you got to get past the next 6 months, you've got to use those 6 months to set you up for the next 6 months, the next 6 months, the next 6 months. I feel they're so focused on the short game, they're losing the long game.
Yeah. Well, and you know, certain companies that have corporate overlords who aren't necessarily well-versed in comics history or comics or anything like that, they may think, well, they may not give them the rope they need to be able to do it. You know, they may just say, you need to hit your numbers, and I really don't care how you do it. And so it doesn't, if the people who are creating the roadmaps for these stories and these creators don't feel supported and feel like their job's in jeopardy, they may not be willing to stick their neck out to do the necessary things for the long-term good of the market, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. They've got to have that kind of support and flexibility. I just think that certainly within the comics realm, they're trying so hard to please everybody that I think they've inadvertently made some sacrifices on kind of the sanctity of the characters. And mm-hmm. part of their job is to act as the guardians of these characters for the long haul. And these characters, over that really long haul, have to change. No two ways about it. The Batman from the 40s would not play as well today, and the Batman from the 60s, same thing. There's a time and a place for each version, but there's a way to evolve the characters versus just throw it all out and replace. And I really fear, particularly at DC, there's a bit of throw it out and replace it mindset at times, that I think is gonna, has already hurt them, and it's gonna hurt them further.
Mm-hmm.
I hope I'm wrong on that. If we look a little further down on the list by another thing at rank number 7, we've got The Walking Dead Compendium Volume 4. I believe that's the last compendium, maybe?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
So it's definitely end of an era for all of that. What was interesting was we had nearly every volume of The Walking Dead on the list this time around in trade format. The one we did not have was Volume 9 for some reason. And I've talked how we normally have kind of that V-shape sales, you know, the earliest and the latest being the bestsellers and stuff. I went and dug through my database by hand to chart out the total sales for Walking Dead and the sales this month for the Walking Dead trades. And the reason I did that is I don't have my data cleaning as good on the trade side as I've got on the monthly comics side. And for a few of these things, like Volume 2, they've listed it like 9 different ways on the list. So I just haven't gotten to where it's all standardized and all of that. But I was able to just by hand kind of do some of that stuff. Most volumes of The Walking Dead this month sold right around 400 units, give or take, you know, 20 or so. The exceptions were like the first 3 and the latest 3. And the first 3 did okay. I mean, that first volume did 561 units, I think it was, this month. Whereas the latest volume did, 32, did 1160. Part of it is people are still, you know, catching up on that tail end of it. No idea why number 9 didn't make the top 300 this time, or how close it was or wasn't to making that.
Mm-hmm.
If I charted out the total known sales, great sales on that first volume, it is up to 425,000 plus. And that next one is 234,000 plus, and then 177,000 plus, almost 178,000 for volume 3. Mm-hmm. And it keeps going down. And then you get a pretty much just a gradual trail off and stuff, mm-hmm. with one or two volumes having a little bit more of a bump than that line would otherwise have suggested, like volumes 9, 17, and 25. But then down towards volume 32 or whatever, which is down at 13,331 units. Now, it's going to be interesting to see over time if these things keep showing on the list and where this chart kind of, I don't say ends up, but levels out.
Mm-hmm.
Is there just a natural fall off where the majority of people who get that first volume really just never make it past, say, volume 7? Do they, you know, because that's about where you've got maybe 25% of the people following on after that.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't expect everyone who starts the first trade to finish the last trade. It's 32 volumes. It's a lot of reading, and it's not for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But it is surprising just kind of how quickly the readership sort of drops off over time. And this is for what I think most of us would consider the unquestionable major success story in comics over the last 15 years.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you just look at those numbers and you know there are probably multiples of that sold through Amazon and other, you know, other markets.
Oh, absolutely. Particularly once the TV show kicked in. And even before that, Walking Dead was a known thing.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, there's some properties that I don't think are really going to do great business in the mass market just because they're kind of obscure.
Yeah.
But there's other stuff, and I certainly think Walking Dead, DC Superhero Girls, Star Wars, Fables, Sandman, those sorts of things probably are going to do disproportionately better in the mass market than most titles. You know, Nightwing, that's one of those mid-level DC titles that, yeah, it'll get into the Barnes & Nobles and stuff. Probably, but it's not like it's going to just, you know, fly off the shelf or something.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to see how this does for Walking Dead. The other thing that's worth noting is if you filter the title list to the ones I highlighted in blue, TJ, which are the Walking Dead ones, many of them have unusually high retail rankings compared to other things at the same price point around them. So I don't know if there was just a sale going on or what was going on the Walking Dead stuff. And it's not exclusive to Walking Dead. There were other Image books that were this way too.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm going to have a thought on that. And I'm sure that, they've thought about this too. You know, Image is known for its relative business. Like the people that run it in the office are pretty good business people. And I'm sure they've seen the natural history of when a series ends, how quickly the sales can fall off, even for something that's quote unquote considered evergreen. And if there's ever a series that they overprinted when they were printing, it was The Walking Dead, right? So they probably have a huge portion of their warehouse that's full of Walking Dead because they always knew that they could send out reorders and reshipments. And now that the series is finally over, they know that that eventually will tail off and they don't want to get stuck with huge, you know, huge crates and pallets of it. So they probably are doing some sales.
Oh, absolutely. It makes sense. I don't know if that'd be the Image office, if that would be Kirkman's people or what, but absolutely. We have seen this trend before where things cool off quickly. Matter of fact, I think last month we saw not much activity on Walking Dead.
Yeah. I mean, remember Fables, how quickly Fables fell off and so.
Oh yeah. So I think they did discount it, and I think it was a smart move. And if they can keep it enough in print that it's always available to retailers, yet not get, you know, having too much in the warehouse, that's kind of their best move.
Yeah. Like if they have a whole corner of their warehouse just for Walking Dead, if they can resize that to one shelf, you know, that they're always, you know, processing, because just like anything with that many volumes, there'll probably always be a few orders here and there, but sometimes even outside the top 300 or 500. But yeah, I'm pretty sure the amount of square footage that Image has in their warehouse right now is not what they hope to in 6 months to a year have for Walking Dead. Or heck, maybe if the sales proved them wrong, that's one time you'd want to be proven wrong, because then you nothing more than printing more and more money.
Absolutely. I don't think they'd be upset if they realize 6 months from now they've still got enough orders on these things, it's worth going back to print.
Yeah, exactly.
But I mean, that's one of the ways you can really kind of gauge interest in a property. It's not by going to your local store and just seeing how much they've got on their shelf. But it's going to a variety of stores and seeing how much they tend to have on average on their shelf.
Absolutely.
To me, I find going to like a Barnes & Noble a pretty good way to get a gauge on like how the Star Trek novels are doing. At one point, they had an entire bookcase of them. Last time I went, which has been a few months, they had like a shelf. And I get it, because they shifted the novels from being done in ones to part of a 6-part story or something like that. Bigger investment for the reader. It probably killed some interest in stuff like that. Plus, when they had the full bookcase, there were multiple Star Trek shows on the air. Now they're on streaming. It's not the same, you know.
Yeah.
So getting a sense, I mean, if you were to go into a dozen different comic stores and see, you know, how much on average shelf space are they allocating to The Walking Dead, you know, a year ago, now, and a year from now, that's a good barometer versus, you know, maybe you've got one store that is just an anomaly, never stocked it or is starting to stock up now. You know, it always amuses me a little when I've periodically over the years of doing the number crunching gotten feedback from a retailer of, well, these numbers don't reflect my sales. So either my sales are wrong or your numbers are wrong, kind of a thing. And I'm like, no, it's your sales are your sales and your customer base is unique to your store. This is a nationwide kind of aggregation. So there are going to be certain things that will play well in other parts of the country or on average that maybe for whatever reason your store is atypically better or worse at selling.
Mm-hmm.
Through no fault of any retailer either.
Yeah.
I mean, I noticed that when I was in college, I was working at a store off campus, but once in a while I'd go into the store that was just on literally across the street from the edge of campus. And that store on the edge of campus tended to be more of the independent stuff, the non-mainstream superhero type stuff, because college is where a lot of people are looking for new things that are different that they haven't experienced before. Versus you get a little further away from campus, you start getting more of the professionals and stuff like that. They're going more for the things they're used to and not looking for the radically different each and every week.
Absolutely, yeah.
Nothing right or wrong about either marketplace, but sometimes just the difference of like 2 miles of where the store's located can make a huge difference. And of course, Brian Hibbs has talked about that with when he got his second store, how different the clientele of those stores were.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's to be expected, and that's a good thing. Just like not every comic can please every person, or every version of a character can please every person, having stores of different personalities and different focuses is really good for the industry. So we had a few other things near the top of the list, within the top 20, 25 or whatever, that I think are worth talking about just a little bit. At rank number 14, we've got Black Canary Ignite from DC Zoom. It did 2,994 units. And then a little below that at rank 18, we've got that Super Sons Volume 2, the Fox Glove Mission from DC Zoom that we talked about briefly, 2,385 units. This is DC doing essentially original graphic novels geared towards a younger audience. And if this gets some people into the fold in terms of reading comics and stuff like that, that's good. Mm-hmm. I don't know if a 16-year-old Black Canary is going to really translate to the current version in the comics or not. But probably it's better than nothing being out there.
Yeah, that's true.
The other one that I found of interest at rank number 19 there is the Power Rangers Psychopath original graphic novel from Boom Studios. This is second or third, I think, of the original graphic novels they've done featuring some of the Power Rangers stuff. This one not focusing on the Mighty Morphin era or the Tommy Oliver character specifically, which was Soul of the Dragon, I think, is what they had done originally.
Mm-hmm.
So this seems to do well for them. Hopefully they'll continue. I think it'd be great if over time they built up a library of Power Ranger stories from the different teams and stuff like that. There were one or two things that showed up higher on the list than I would have expected, but that's just my own prejudices, I guess. Rank number 32, we've got Major X trade paperback, 1,861 units. That is the Rob Liefeld character they introduced. I read the first issue on that and said, okay, I've had enough. Well, it wasn't bad, but Rob Liefeld is either you like him or you don't.
Yeah. He has an acquired taste. I'll agree with you there.
And for somebody that was such a superstar in comics at one point, to have had such a polarizing effect on the audience is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a number of things on the list this time around that I get why they're here. I don't know if I necessarily would have put them on this list. If we sort to the ones I highlighted in orange, and yes, I've gotten my list where it's very color-coded. Let me refilter this to orange. We've got the coloring book for DC's Supergirl. We've got, let's see, these are not colored the ones I thought I was coloring. I'm sorry. We had a few poster books in here.
Mm-hmm.
And some stuff like that. I think there was a book on writing for...
Write Your Own Marvel.
Your Own Marvel. That was one of them, yeah. So... I don't know where I would put some of those things. The top book list only goes to about 10 items, so I don't think I would have put them there. But to me, there's a difference between stuff that is sequential storytelling and art and stuff that is not.
Mm-hmm.
So I just I found it interesting, the number of poster books and stuff like that we had this time around, and you know, coloring books and stuff like that. Some of those kind of come and go over time. Nothing right or wrong about it, but it is interesting to see how that goes.
Yeah. One I had interest in just asking you about, did they market this correctly, or is this just like such sub minutia? At looks like rank 161, Crisis of Infinity Earth's Companion Deluxe Volume 3. Is it the fact that it's the third volume, so it's really like scraping the bottom of the barrel of like the companion stories, or is it $75, or because it only sold 645 units, or is it just old material that you have to be a real diehard to want that?
This is one that I think you've kind of got to be a diehard to really want. This mm-hmm. is stuff that is tangential to Crisis on Infinite Earths mm-hmm. and not even the main tangential stuff. So you're getting like an issue of Amethyst, two issues of Blue Devil, three of Wonder Woman, an issue of Swamp Thing.
Gotcha.
Two non-consecutive issues of Legion of Superheroes, a couple of Superman, a few DC Comics Presents. And if they're the ones I'm thinking of, they were themed as having been an impact or whatever connected to Crisis, but not part of the main story at all.
Oh, gotcha.
So some of this is, if you haven't read Crisis like recently, and if you're not in the mindset of what was going on in the universe at that time, these are going to feel like a mishmash anthology kind of a thing. And I think the price point didn't really help it either.
Gotcha. Yeah.
But I'll be honest, I was expecting Crisis on Infinite Earths to do better this time than it did, because they're building up towards the adaptation of it, or the analogy of it or whatever for the CW shows. So I was thinking we were going to see it starting to resurface and, you know, gain in sales. Now, maybe we're a little early because we're looking at the October numbers. That crossover is not happening until early December, but it was one that I think is going to have some resonance with a wider audience, potentially for a little bit of time. We'll see how that does.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that comes down to, if people watch the Crisis on Infinite Earths 5-part crossover, is that story going to be thematically close enough to what had happened in the DC Universe in the 80s to one, get people over to that book, and two, if they read it, for them to really like it?
Mm-hmm.
And from what I'm seeing so far, I think it's a similar enough story. Yeah, all the particulars are going to be different, but I think it could work. So I just, I think it's one of those cases where there's a particular trade to go get. If you like Crisis on Infinite Earths, we might see a little bit more crossover sales kind of happening from that than we typically would from Flash, Arrow, Supergirl, Batwoman just being on the air.
Gotcha. Yeah.
But part of it for those things with the CW shows is, with the exception of the Flash, most of the characters they're leveraging are not A-list or in some cases even B-list characters of the DC Universe. And for Black Lightning, he had a short-lived series in the 70s. He was a member of Batman and the Outsiders, and then the Outsiders. He's being used currently over in Detective. He's had another miniseries or two, but that's about it. It's not like he's got this wealth of material for them to draw on for the show, or for people to go from there to the comics and say, oh, wow, I've got to go get this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the stuff from the 70s is, well, it's from the 70s. There's nothing right or wrong about that, but somebody in, you know, 2019 is going to have a different story telling sensibility than these things written in the mid-70s.
Oh, absolutely. It's going to be a very different feel.
The irony is that's where they're pulling a lot of stuff from for Tobias Whale and things of that sort. But likewise, Batwoman doesn't have this huge body of material for people to go pull from. Supergirl has a larger body of work, but again, some of it is from earlier time frames and, frankly, was not all that popular when it was out to begin with. Arrow, I think, has a large body of work with, like, Grell's work on Green Arrow and stuff like that. But the storytelling sensibility is both similar and different that, and there's, again, so much of Grell's run that, well, where do you jump in? You know, there's not a, if you like Arrow, you must read this one thing, be it the Longbow Hunters or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we typically tend to see the crossover happening more with something like Watchmen or 300 or Umbrella Academy, where there's a single kind of go-to trade to start with.
Yeah, no, it's, yeah, the entry point, as we've talked about in the past.
Well, both the entry point and the obviousness of the entry point.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's some stuff that if you are liking, if you're liking The Flash, the obvious entry point, I guess, would be the Silver Age start of his run, but that's 60s storytelling style. Is there a better jumping on point? You know, it's tough.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we'll see how that goes. It's just one of those things that the comic properties have gotten so widely accepted, yet we're still seeing so many of these things just selling okay.
Yeah, I think it's it's just different audiences, you know. I think just a completely different group of people they're okay just interfacing occasionally with comics or with comics related material.
Yeah. So we've got a couple of things that are continuing to do well. We saw 4 volumes of Immortal Hulk on the list this time around. Not too surprising that seems to be doing well. We've got a few of the Earth One, I think, Batman books showing up here. Out of all of them, those would be the ones I would kind of expect to be there. But man, the Earth One novels, graphic novels, I've still got a bunch of them to read myself. They come out so infrequently.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if they'd had one every quarter, even if it was a different character each time, but it felt like that was an ongoing concern on that world,
mm-hmm.
I think it'd have built up a lot better mind share than it really has.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, because until you had mentioned them, I hadn't thought about those in quite a long time.
And they're still, I think, ongoing concerns. I just don't know. So I just... a little puzzled where their mind's at on their publishing plan at times at some of these companies. I don't think they've got a really good game plan for building up the interest in something and then keeping that interest going. And that's easy to point out and hard to do, and I get that. But when I see some of the stuff where there's no clear transition plan on some of these characters, I don't know what to suggest.
Yeah.
So what else looked interesting to you?
Yeah, you know, I definitely am agreeing with you. I see a lot of these, like, coloring DC Batman Hush, coloring DC Supergirl, you know, and some of it's reorder activity. So it's interesting to see just kind of these ancillary products that they're Harley Quinn and Suicide Squad, an adult coloring book. That's an interesting choice.
Yeah. Not sure what where they're going with some of these things.
Yeah, I think a lot of it's just like found money, you know. I mean, in theory, I guess I don't know what the costs are to print these and whatnot, and if the little sales that they do have justify it. But, you know, maybe they saw some of the, you know, about 2 years ago there was a big trend in like adult coloring books, and everything. Some of it's chasing a trend and things like that. And
well, with that one in particular, I think not only are they belatedly chasing the coloring book trend, but they've got the movie for Harley and the Birds of Prey coming out.
Yeah, that's true.
So they're targeting that in advance. They've also got a new Black Label Harley Birds of Prey kind of thing coming out. It's just, with Harley in particular, they've positioned the character in a number of different places simultaneously,
mm-hmm.
that it's hard for me to really know which, if any of them, are relevant versions. And certainly for me, that's one of the things that's getting me kind of less interested in reading certain things. You know, if you've got 4 different versions of Harley Quinn or the Joker or Batman going around, you've given me the license to pick and choose any or none of them.
Yeah. And more people are tending towards, well, just sit this one out, you know, in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and that's understandable, but I think that is to the publisher's disadvantage, that while chasing that short-term gain, they're really shooting themselves in the foot long term if they're not careful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, just for what I'm seeing on the list, you know, I see a bit more of the manga reorder activity, especially there's quite a bit of the My Hero Academia. I'm not familiar with that series. I think it made it into the top 10 for this month with volume 21, but just seeing just more uptick in that. And I always like to see sales of that stuff coming back to the direct market. I know that was primarily a bookstore driven, you know, when that was a much higher with Borders and Barnes and Noble, but it is good to see kind of some diversification, people seeing and enjoying some manga back in the direct market.
Absolutely. And that had a number of volumes on the list. In addition to 21, it had volumes 1, 2, 5, 4, 3, 6, and 20. Again, kind of sort of following that V formation we've talked about. There's mm-hmm. also the Vigilantes Volume 6 side part of that. I have not read this yet. It is on my radar or something I may want to check out. It seems to be kind of a high school superhero sort of thing going on.
Mm-hmm.
That is, I think, kind of a Japanese take on American heroes.
Gotcha.
I don't know that for certain. If somebody is more knowledgeable on this, please chime in on the Slack channel or forum and let us know. And certainly let me know if this is something I ought to be reading. I will say that one of the things that has slowed down my reading of manga that happened, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago, was when the manga got more authentic and had the right-to-left reading order instead of the left-to-right reading order I'm used to.
Mm-hmm.
And I get that you just read Japanese in the other direction, but it's muscle memory for me.
Yeah. I will agree with you that when I do read manga, the first like chapter or so, as I'm starting from having, you know, read Western comics for a while, I definitely have to reorient myself and I'm much slower. But then usually how I read manga is I'll read a couple, 2 to 3 volumes in a row. So by the time I'm about halfway through the first volume, I'm kind of back in the mode of it. But it is disorienting at first because you're like, wait, where do I look next? You know,
part of it for me is I've got, you know, 70,000 comics worth of reading experience in one direction.
Yeah, that's part of it too.
And again, nothing right or wrong about it, but I'm glad we're seeing some of the manga doing better than it used to be. Viz seems to be in better shape than it was at one point. I really think that they had enough success in the mass market that Borders going out and stuff like that really, I think, put a bump in the road for them.
Uh-huh.
But if manga can get kids or anyone really interested in reading this stuff and then branching out into other areas, that's a win for everybody.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree for sure.
I mean, to me, the path to getting somebody who's not reading comics to reading comics, we can get them interested in the material through movies, TVs, video games. We can then get them into a comic or something. And once you've gotten over that hurdle, then you can potentially branch them out into all the other stuff. But it's hard to get them past that hurdle of their interest in the material to actually looking at the source material. Because, I mean, these price points are a little harsh. The return on the investment isn't a slam dunk compared to what they're used to, you know?
Mm-hmm.
$10-$12, you got a great 2-2.5 hour movie versus, you know, here's $4 and you get about 10 minutes worth of entertainment. You know, hard sell on the comic side. Trades, I think, are easier. But, yeah. So again, we had a number of things that were really high retailer rankings. So I think there was some definite discounting going on this time around, getting some stuff out of the warehouse near the end of the year or prepping for the holidays or whatever. And if that's getting stuff onto store shelves and giving a better margin for some retailers and stuff, I think that's great. This is a good time for that to happen. If we look at the price points, $16.99 was the major price point in the top 300, followed by $9.99, then $19.99, and then we've also got some stuff at $24.99, $29.99. It's just kind of all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
I still think most of it is in that $20 or less range, which I think is good. I think the lower price points covering actually $20 or less was 70% of the top 300 exactly, which is kind of funny. But that's good. I think it's good to have a couple of things at those higher price points, the $100, $125, $150 for the fancier, larger collections and stuff. But I think having the lower price stuff to get it out to the masses, that's where the win is, because that's how you build up a fan base.
That makes sense.
So, anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
I think that does it for this month. It'll be interesting to see the direction that Marvel and DC continue to trend down and to see if we see Walking Dead kind of fade off, or if Kirkman comes out with something new. We'll see.
Well, and also if going into November we start seeing sales increase kind of in the lower part of the list as stores are stocking up for the holidays.
Yeah, that's true. That is true as well.
So, cool. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening. The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Dynamic Comics Distribution for the month in question.
The Diamond Order Index only goes 2 decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics has usually used the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there is at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust that needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50, 25, or a few scanned items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which, as far as I know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic books, graphic novels, and or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer's here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the ultimate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Ath, object, and English language itself seem to work very differently there.